General Gordon used their little victory to counter the numbing despair of the civilian inhabitants of the city. He gathered up the corpses of the enemy, 216, laid them out in rows on the harbour quay, and invited the populace to view them. The women spat upon them, and the men kicked them and shouted abuse, calling down the curse of Allah and condemning them to the fires and torments of hell. They shouted with glee as the corpses were thrown into the river, where the crocodiles snapped at them and dragged them below the surface. Gordon posted official bulletins in every square and souk of the city, announcing that the British relief columns were now in full march for the city and would almost certainly arrive within days. He also gave them the joyous tidings that the dervish was so disheartened by their devastating defeat and the approach of the British columns that vast numbers were deserting the black flag of the Mahdi and marching into the desert to return to their tribal homelands. It was true that there was a large movement of dervish troops on the enemy bank, but Gordon knew that they were being sent northwards in battle array to oppose the British relief columns. More welcome bulletins announced that General Gordon had declared a double ration of durra from the stock he was holding in the arsenal. The same bulletin informed the people that the remaining stocks of grain were more than sufficient to feed the city until the arrival of the relief column. It assured them that when the steamers docked in the harbour, they would offload thousands of sacks of grain. That night Gordon lit bonfires on the Maidan. The band played until midnight, and the night sky was lit up again by rockets and coloured flares. Early the following morning he called a more sombre meeting in his headquarters. There were only two other participants, David Benbrook and Penrod Ballantyne. Gordon looked at Penrod first. "You have drawn up the latest inventory of the grain stocks?" "It did not take long, sir. At 10 o'clock last night there were 4,960 sacks remaining. Yesterday's issue of double rations expended 562. At the present rate of consumption, we have sufficient durra for another 15 days. "In 3 days I will be forced to halve the ration again," Gordon said. "But this is not the time to tell the people." David looked shocked. "But, General, surely the relief column will be here in 2 weeks? Your own bulletins gave that assurance." "I have to protect the people from the truth," Gordon replied. "Well, what then is the truth?" David demanded. Gordon contemplated the ash on his cigarette before he replied. "The truth, sir? The truth is not a monolith cast in iron. It is like a cloud in the sky, constantly changing shape. From every direction that one views it, it offers a different aspect." "That description has great literary value, I have no doubt. But in this situation it is of little help," David smiled bleakly. "When can we expect the relief column to reach us?" "The information I am about to disclose to you must not go beyond the four walls of this room." "I understand. Six dervish were taken prisoner at the harbour." "I thought there would have been more," David frowned. "There were," Gordon shrugged. David knew better than to pursue the subject. This was the Orient, where different standards prevailed. Interrogation under torture fell within those standards. The six prisoners were questioned by my Sergeant Khalid. We obtained much useful intelligence, none of it reassuring. The steamers of the River Division seemed to have been delayed at Korti." "Good Lord! They should have been at Abu Hamed by now," David exclaimed. "What on earth is holding them back?" "We do not know, and speculation is vain." "What of the Desert Division under Stuart?" "Here it is the same sad story. Stuart is still encamped at the wells of Garkul," Gordon told him. "It does not seem possible that either of those divisions can reach us before the end of the month," David mused, then looked at the others hopefully for a denial. Neither man responded. Gordon broke the silence. "What is the state of the river, Ballantyne?" "Yesterday it fell 5 inches," Penrod replied. "Each day the pace of the ebb is accelerating." "Can one apply the word ebb to falling river waters?" David asked, as if to make light of the serious implications. Gordon ignored the frivolous question. "The prisoners had other information to give us. The Mahdi has ordered another 25,000 of his elite fighting men northwards to reinforce his army. There are now 50,000 dervish gathered at Abu Hamed." He paused, as though reluctant to continue. "Stuart has 2,000. That means he is outnumbered 25 to 1. The dervish know exactly what route he must follow to reach the river. They will choose their ground with care before they attack. Stuart is a fine officer, David tried to sound confident. One of the best, Gordon agreed. But 25 to 1 is long odds. In God's name, we must warn Stuart of the danger. Yes, that is what I intend. Gordon looked across at Penrod. I am sending Captain Ballantyne to the wells of Gugdul to warn him and guide him through. How do you intend that he make the journey, General? As far as I am aware, there are no camels in the city. They have all been eaten. There is only one steamer, Rider Courtney's Intrepid Ibis, but the engine is still out of commission. It's highly unlikely that a dhow will get through the dervish lines. Gordon gave a chilly smile. I have discovered that Mr. Courtney is the owner of a fine herd of at least 20 racing camels. He has been prudent enough not to keep them in the city, where I might have found them, but has sent them out into the desert, to a tiny oasis 2 days' travel to the south. They are grazing there under the care of some of his people. David chuckled. Rider Courtney has more arrows to his bow than a monkey has fleas. For somebody who recently queried my use of the language, that is a magnificently garbled an image, as you are like to come across in a year of searching, Penrod smiled with him. When taxed with the question of the camels, he at first denied ownership. Gordon was not smiling. Then he denied that he had any intention of concealing them from me, and said that it was simply a matter of the availability of grazing for his beasts. I immediately commandeered them. If he had been honest with me from the beginning, I might have considered compensation. He may not comply with your orders, David said. Rider Courtney is a man of, independent spirit. And of avaricious instinct, Gordon agreed. But in this case, he would be unwise in the extreme to gainsay me. Even under martial law, one would hesitate to shoot a subject of the Queen, but he has several warehouses full of ivory and a large menagerie of exotic but edible animals. Gordon looked smug. My persuasive logic has prevailed. Courtney has sent word to his herdsmen at the oasis to bring the camels in, and I expect them to be at our disposal by the day after tomorrow. I had no idea of the gravity of the situation, David murmured. Had I done so, I would have prevented my daughter arranging a celebration of your victory at the harbour. She has planned a soiree for tomorrow evening. Unfortunately, our kitchens can no longer provide elaborate dinners. However, there will be piano recitals and singing. If you think this inappropriate, General, I shall ask Rebecca to cancel the evening. Oh, not at all, Gordon shook his head. Although I shall not attend, Miss Spenbrook's festivities will keep up pretences and spirits. She must go ahead, by all means.